Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Rustland, today we have the return of, for the second and possibly the last time, Azura Rahman of BFM, who is leaving BFM.
Yes, I am. 7 years here, and I think...
7 years?
7 years, I know, right? That's a long time. Mm-hmm. It's time to move on to other pastures.
Okay.
You're giving me a questioning look.
Well, we're on some reasons in a minute. Right. And also we have, returning after a long time, the person who has recently put on the smash hit Georgetown Literary Festival. Woo-hoo. And who has just finished writing her novel, Bernice Chorley.
Thank you. It's always great to be back.
And our three topics will be, topic number one is motherhood. Topic number two is all things Icelandic. And finally, topic number three is timeless imagery, ? So, topic number one, motherhood, is my topic. But you probably guessed, I've never been a mother. Both Bernice and Azura are mothers. Now, Bernice has two rapidly growing up kids, mm-hmm. One in university right now. Mm-hmm. Azura, you're leaving BFM in order to go and give birth to yet another child.
Yet another child, child number three.
Wow.
All right. Yes, I know.
And your kids are fairly young, 5 and 3.
5 and 3.
Right. Yeah. And I want to ask, I'm not a mother, I'm not a parent of any description. Are you two and I, are we different species? Do we see the world differently?
Is that differently? A real
question? It is.
It
is a real question. I mean, do we fundamentally see the world very differently? So, for instance, Bernice, you've recently finished your novel, and I'm happened to be writing one myself at the moment. Mm-hmm. When you're writing a novel, the existence of your children, is that on your mind? Do you see time differently from me? Because you have a future through your children that I don't have.
Okay, that's a very multi-layered question. The novel does talk about motherhood as well. It's about a mother who loses a child. So writing this has been very, very difficult and very painful at times. I have older children now. I have a 20-year-old who's in university. I have a 16-year-old who's in the throes of teenage angst. It's a difficult time for them. It's a difficult time for me. But in terms of being a mother and being a creative person, I think having children, having young children, impacts your creative life a lot more significantly as opposed to when you have older children. For example, when my kids were your age, for example, I couldn't write anything that was longer than, 15 lines or 20 lines, because I just did not have the time or the headspace to be able to concentrate on something. And when my kids became older, I managed to work on this memoir of mine, which took 2 years to write. And I was writing between the time of 10 p.m. and 4 a.m. every day for a year and a half. I could do that because the kids would sleep through the night. But it's only now that I've been able to finish writing this novel, which has taken 5 years of my life.
So you finally get rid of them, and and now you exist again.
Yes. Well, yes and no. I mean,
is it catharsis as well? All those years of words being pent up.
Yeah. And in a way, I think what motherhood does, it gives you a tremendous sense of discipline, and a tremendous respect for time. I mean, you just don't waste time. Wow. You just don't.
And you can't afford to.
No, you can't afford to.
So, Azura, you and I were talking about this thing, and you were incredibly patronizing towards me.
You didn't see that then, It's all surfacing on air.
Right, so what's motherhood? Because there was a time when neither of you were mothers or parents.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
And if you can think back to that time, how are you different now from what you were then?
I think I was incredibly self-indulgent. And that was the accusation that my mom threw at me all the time, because it seemed as though my life was a flurry of holidays and buying things for myself, and at the same time not devoting myself to a cause or anything. And it probably says a lot about me as a person that, that I found more purpose now, mm-hmm. As a mother than before that, it says something about me which doesn't necessarily translate to everyone else. It's very personal, I think, how everyone approaches motherhood and embraces motherhood. There's no one and true type as to how a woman embraces motherhood. And I think it's important not to judge individual mothers on that basis as well.
On how they parent their children.
On how they parent their children. Mm-hmm. And
you do that, don't you?
I do that. I do think that I overparent sometimes, and I think my mom says that to me all the time, because she is wartime generation, and you know, she had four children. She gave birth to my eldest brother on May 16th, 1969. My dad couldn't get to the hospital because, you know, there was the curfew imposed at the moment. And she's just like, yeah, you just kind of get on with it. You all overthink, lah. That's what she says to us all the time,
right,
you know.
Right.
But it's a different generation. And I think even when I see my sister-in-law, whose son is now 22, how she parented him when he was a baby, and how I parent my kids, it's very different because we are, you know, I hate saying it, it's a cliche, but we are in the age of information. Things are being shared on Facebook on how you should think and how you should approach things. And you kind of make your way through all of that and trying to find, you know, the best way.
Because there is no, I mean, you know, you have all these manuals and stuff like that, but it really, you know, you might as well just chuck it out the window. Because
the moment the baby comes along.
Yes, because you just learn everything on the spot, you know, you have to. But I think the worst thing about motherhood, and this is something that I'm really, really dealing with now, is that you worry all the time. I mean, my daughter is, you know, thousands of miles away. She's in London. When I say goodbye to her at the airport, it's horrific, of course. You burst into tears and you sort of go right till the end and you just sort of wave and then she's gone. And then you rush home and you start tracking the goddamn flight.
Right.
Because you're like, you know, you just get on this flight tracker thing and you're like, okay, so it's over India now. Okay, then it's the worst is when it goes over Syria or Iraq and you're just like, oh my God.
Okay,
you
but,
know,
but,
it's just,
but Bunny,
you just worry nonstop.
All right, but that was the first departure. And, you know, I mean, you know, with my mother now, I've been, you know, disappearing on and off for the last 30, 40, 50 years. I can't remember. So, but there was a day when, or there has surely been a day when, with your eldest child, when you didn't speak to her for a whole day for the first time ever. And that will continue. How do either of you imagine motherhood will be at a time when they just don't need you anymore?
Well, you see, I have two very distinct children.
You know,
very distinct children. I mean, they're completely different characters. They're completely different animals. My younger one is, you know, very moody, you know, very creative, kind of like me. But my older one just, you know, she's a lot friendlier. She needs me more than my younger one does.
So she's a favorite. No, you basically said it on air.
No,
so.
I just have very different Yeah, you just have very different relationships with them. You know,
some better than others,
more than others. And I think that's the other thing is when you don't feel you're needed anymore. This kind of empty void inside of you, like, what do I do
Azura,
now?
You're grimacing.
From a very early age. You know, my daughter now is four and a bit, and she just started reception in school. And for the first 2 weeks, she was bawling every single morning, right?
And you love that.
Well, no. I mean, it made things...
Don't put words in her mouth.
Do you know what I mean? It made things difficult on a practical level. You know, because I still had to go to work. But yesterday was the first time she walked to class by herself. You know, I'm pulling her little wheelie bag behind her. And my husband and I were like, well, there she goes. You know, she doesn't need us anymore. Yeah. And it's just...
All that work for nothing.
You know, didn't even look back at us, right? Not even a wave. Yeah. But, you know, I think that's just the first of many steps. Mm. And that's the thing about motherhood. Mm. I would say parenthood. It's very bittersweet.
Yeah.
You know, there's this push and pull of, you know, of love and pain all the time, you know. Yeah. And that's where it becomes very difficult.
Okay, we have to move on. But very quickly, therefore... Are you two and I, are we different species?
Well, when I say that to you, Cam, I think as participants of society, we are different in the sense that I know many people who are kidless, childless, who hate children and hate the fact that they can make noise and hate the fact that they could disrupt their peace. Not taking into account that there are a lot of adults who do that, you know, and they shouldn't be doing that. Mm. So I think in some ways, the difference is maybe in how we react towards children, whether we're a bit more inclusive of them as members of society, where they were a bit more empathetic of them.
Other people's children, sure. And Bernice?
Oh my goodness. Being a mother is being unlike, you know, anything else. It just takes so much from you. It gives you so much in return, but it also leaves you wanting to sort of leap from the highest building or from a mountain, because there are times when you just don't know what to do. There are times when you're just so uncertain and there's nothing anyone can say or a best friend or another mother is going to say to make you feel better. Because you're charting that untrodden path, because I think all mothers trod different paths.
Okay. And speaking of leaps into the unknown, Bernice?
Iceland, yes. I'm fascinated with all things Icelandic at the moment. And it kind of started with this film called The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. There's a large segment where it's shot in Iceland. And the landscape is just beautiful. Just absolutely gorgeous. The film Oblivion was shot there as well. But When I read this book written by Hannah Kent, this Australian writer, called Burial Rites, which is set in Iceland, my interest was piqued even more. And then recently watching Arrival, which had a terrific soundtrack by Icelandic composer Jóhann Jóhannsson. I just think they're really, really interesting people. Do you know that it has one of the lowest crime rates in the world? I think only two people were murdered in the last 20 years. And recently, there was this murder of a 20-year-old in Reykjavik. And it's just stunned the entire nation. It's just like, you know, people are obsessed with it. So you have this land of contrasting beauty, people who are seemingly happy. They believe in elves, by the way. So it sounds like it's my kind of place, man.
It's your place, isn't it, Bernice? It really is. But hang on, Bernice. Have you been to Iceland?
No, I really want to. I want to find a writing residency there so I can actually do research on my second novel, which is going to be set in the Great White North. So,
you know, the Great White North, I mean, Kuda.
You know, the funny thing is, I just read an article yesterday about places all over the world where they are beginning to limit tourists because of the fact that they've become so popular, and Iceland is one of them.
Oh, really?
So
okay.
Apparently, they have trebled in the number of tourists since 2005 or so, very recently. And yes, it's all these movies, you know, using Iceland as a location. Justin Bieber shot his video there, and made it very popular at the same time. I just went to a wedding in Langkawi where the pre-wedding shoot was done in Iceland as well.
What?
So, you know,
my goodness.
So, you know, if you think you're being kind of recherché and rather like something special about
that
Iceland.
That sounds so Bollywood.
But Iceland is really up there when it comes, you know, in terms of popular culture.
Yeah.
And also, it seems to be now increasingly on these sort of like, you know, 10 things you must do before you die
is go see the
Northern Lights in Iceland. Yeah. But the population is only, what, 325,000?
330,000, something like that. Yeah, it's very, very small population.
So
but just incredibly prolific in terms of literature and music. And
I think it's because they're so cut off.
Well, I mean, the landscape, surely. I mean, you know, when you cast your eyes out and you see the absolutely beautiful landscape of Iceland, it must, and the disgusting regurgitated whale blubber that they eat.
it's fermented shark.
But you mentioned the low crime rates and the fact that I think that a society can be so, I don't know if controlled is the right word, but the homogeneity of the society maybe, you know, accounts for that, right?
That homogeneity is something coming from Malaysia, which is strikingly strange, kind of attractive, but I would not personally, I'm not capable of living in a place like that, I don't think. I remember during the YouTube, you know, you two being girls, you probably don't watch the football, so...
Now, that's a sexism if I've ever heard one on air.
Okay. And but during the last Euro thing, there was this moment that went viral where the Icelandic supporters and the football team did this chant, which is actually copied from a Scottish football club, but it was called the Viking Yell or something. But it was suddenly watching sense like the entire community, and this was a percentage of the Icelandic population in that stadium, doing the same thing at the same time was, on the one hand, kind of attractive, and I can understand why xenophobic nationalists would love that sort of thing, but at the same time completely alien to me. But maybe the alienness of the landscape of Iceland is what attracts you, Bernice.
Possibly, but also...
Because you've never been there.
No, and I think I have this, I find it a very fascinating culture. Just the music that comes out of it, you know, like Jóhann Jóhannsson's, the sound that comes out of this mind of this composer and the influences, you know, they were descendants from Vikings.
You're just gushing now, Bernice.
It's so otherworldly,
it's
right? Kind
of, yes, it's otherworldly. That's the word.
But you and I, we've known each other for a very long time, Bernice. And I do remember when we first met, you were, even then, you were a huge fan of Björk.
Yes.
So
every girl was a fan of Björk in the 90s.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I mean, you know.
I was one. Yeah.
Well, obviously, I was a fan back in the 80s, even before
sure,
that, when she was still in the Sugar Cubes. Eh? Producer Arnie, eh? High five. And but you've always been attracted to
well, the North and the Vikings and the Celts.
It's the mythology,
perhaps,
the landscape.
Yes,
it's the
yeah.
Because it's so not your personal history.
No, maybe I was, you know.
Yeah.
In your past, maybe, you know, in a different life.
Yeah. But, I mean, I'm very serious about this. I really want to try and find a writing residency there.
You're speaking on air at the right place.
She's advertising now.
Yes,
Our listenership is...
Wide and varied.
Did you know that Bobby Fischer became an Icelandic citizen?
Did he?
And died there in 2008.
Bobby Fischer, the chess
champion.
Chess lunatic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would love to go to Iceland. Incredibly expensive,
apparently. It is. Yes.
Azura, you been?
No, I haven't.
So I'm very curious about this wedding thing that was shot. Like, what were they doing? Were they sort of...
on black sands?
Yes, there was a bit of that. I know all those basalt columns by the sea. And then I was also walking through behind those waterfalls, those very famous waterfalls as well. You know, and this was
the
done
Blue
during
Lagoon,
summer.
That's one of the...
This was done during summer. Well, okay, you know, it's a Muslim wedding, so it's got to be halal in that sense, right? So there's no like bikinis in the Blue Lagoon. but it was beautiful for a montage. Because like you said, you know, the landscape is so otherworldly.
And it's so bleak. I think I like the bleakness of it as well.
In summer, it's so green, though.
Yeah.
Do you know?
I did actually see a video from a Bollywood movie of this great song and dance number that was filmed at a great expense in Iceland, and I'm sure your friends were inspired by
it. They were, as a matter of fact. Yeah. There was the one with Shah Rukh Khan.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, it was really quite gorgeous, with the black sands and the... And apparently...
I'll send the link to you.
But as is usually the case, it was so cold, apparently, that the girl, I can't remember who it was...
Kajol.
Shivering away in the cold, whilst he was able to wear a nice coat the whole time. Yeah, anyway, we move on, and good luck, Bernice.
Our listeners have heard the call, and
I'm sure you'll be getting your residency there any day now, because that's how it works here on A Bit of Culture. And in a moment, we return with topic number three, timelessness, here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9.
Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during red, white, and blue savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.
And we're back with me, Karim Ruslan, Azura, and Bernice. Oh, here on A Bit of Culture. I'm supposed to say that these days. And now, Azura, topic number three, and this your second and final, episode of A Bit of Culture.
Perhaps. And unless you want me to come back, you know, on a freelance basis, contributor basis.
Yeah, but you have a pram and stuff. We just can't allow that.
Baby, I know. This sounds in the background. Ali wouldn't stand for it. Yeah. What I want to talk about is basically creating a timeless image, you know, timeless imagery. And this really popped up in my head because, you know, you have something called Facebook and Facebook memories. And whether you like it or not, every day, you know, actually regurgitate a memory from the past, whether it's from 6 years past or even further beyond that. And what it struck me is, I look at a picture that's just from 5 years ago, maybe, and I would like to think that I haven't aged that much. But, you know, regardless of how the composition of that picture is deemed to be classic, you know, you could be wearing the most basic clothes, you know, a white shirt and a pair of jeans, but passage of time affords it, you know, that little patina of showing that this happened in the past. And it could be just... the slightest nuances, you know, could be, you know, the lighting of how pictures were taken. Then it's a different language taking pictures. Then it could be, you know, a change in how hair is worn in the slightest way, or even your makeup. It just raised a question to me whether I could ever create, or has it ever been created, that timeless image of someone from the 40s or someone from the 60s that still looks, you know, as it was taken yesterday, you know, or will it always be eaten by, you know, the ravages of time in one way or another, whether it's because of how people dress today or simply because of how people light their pictures today, you know. And it made me think that, you know, since I host a little show called Style File, and fashion is something that I do cover, that in fashion imagery, that's why black and white is, you know, always the favorite medium, because you kind of surpass all the color difficulties, you know, and you just work with light and shadow. And that's where the great photographers like Richard Avedon, for example, has, you know, created things like, you know, Andy Warhol's portraits, you know, and all the other portrait imagery he's done over the years. But, you know, how do I do that? How do I achieve that? You know, how do I freeze time for myself?
This makes Azura feel emoticon sad face.
I am on the wrong side of the 30s. You know,
there's only the right side.
Right.
I don't know. I think that I'm not sure. Timelessness might be a misnomer, because maybe what those classic images that we remember are classic because they actually just depict a moment in time, specific moment, and that's the whole purpose. You know, the great shot of, say, James Dean walking through Times Square in the rain is of the excitement of youth in the 50s.
But you can date it from the 50s.
Yeah, but therefore it's not timeless, surely, by your definition.
Yeah, by my definition, yes, in that sense.
I mean, if you're wearing clothes and you're in a city, then it will be dated.
Yes.
So if you're naked and in a, say, an Icelandic landscape, then, then maybe it can be timeless. I don't know.
This has become highly suggestible, you know, Cam.
Yeah, I think clothing and landscape and architecture sort of denotes time and space. And I think what I'm trying to grasp what you're trying to say. I think timeless images sort of alludes to a certain kind of classicism. You know, when Henri Cartier-Bresson started taking pictures, Richard Avedon, the sort of iconic...
Girl with the elephants.
The elephants, yeah. Those are timeless in the sense that because it's a beautiful image. So I think when you're talking about timelessness, maybe you're talking about beauty as well. You're talking about how the photographer has managed to capture an image that is of beauty, humanity.
But beauty that we respect today.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean,
yeah.
But beauty changes. I mean, it's very strange. If I look at photographs of bathing bells from the 1920s in Hollywood, and you suddenly jump just 10 years later and you see Joan Crawford, the bathing bells back then, the conception of beauty is completely different now. They're quite chubby girls.
It seems quite quaint in that sense, right?
Then suddenly you go to, Joan Crawford, the aquiline, angular look and the hair coiffed in a certain way, the black and white is so sumptuous. We don't look at those pictures from the 1920s anymore and say that's beauty and that's timeless.
But that's aesthetic beauty. I'm talking about the composition of the image.
Yes.
All right.
At the same time, it's what makes something timeless is... If something still rings true or is perceived to be true. I mean, one of the things that came to mind was Steve McCurry's image of the Afghan girl, right? Mm, mm-hmm. And that was taken about... Yeah, with the blue-eyed girl. That was taken about 30 years ago, maybe, but you could have thought it was taken yesterday. Mm. And maybe it's because, you know, our perceptions of what Afghanistan is like back then and now rings the same. And I don't know, if you take a picture of maybe a nun in habit, perhaps, you know, or, you know, an Amish lady. I don't know why I'm going down this path. But, you know, I wouldn't be able to date it if you took a picture of such a person that's out of context of her background. I would think it's, you know, something that's taken yesterday. Yeah. And maybe that's what it is. It's contextual.
The Afghan girl, I mean, that appeals to our emotions. I mean, our sense of pity for the state of Afghanistan, that it is the same now, in fact, possibly even worse now than it was then, etc. If Afghanistan in that period of time had suddenly transformed into high rises and sort of like a Singapore, you know, we'd feel pity in a different sense, perhaps. Whoops. No, but what I mean, I'm not sure the timelessness thing is, like, for instance, okay, there's that classic photograph of the tennis-playing girl who's walking away from us and she's scratching her bum. Now, you don't know that. It was classic.
It was an Athena poster.
Athena poster.
It must have been in your bedroom at some point.
Throughout the 70s or the 80s, I mean, for a good decade and a half, it was a timeless image.
Kylie recreated that image.
Yeah, but
Kylie Minogue.
But now it's gone. Or that famous picture of Farrah Fawcett, you know, where you can like, can you see something? Can you can't? That was once a timeless image, but is now forgotten.
You're talking about idols of your youth,
Well, it's iconography. You're talking about images that were sort of iconic of that particular time. Like that picture of George Michael with his earrings kind of staring into the camera. I mean, that was iconic for me for quite a long time.
Mm. But you look back at it now and you think, my God, what were they thinking when it comes to hair, right? The very least. I mean, I don't think anyone can look at pictures of themselves in the 80s and do not feel that they look older then than they do now.
And that makes you feel sad.
It doesn't make me feel sad. Okay, that makes me feel smug because then, you know, it makes me feel like, no, we look better now. We look younger now. But, you know, I don't think it makes me feel sad looking at pictures of myself thrown out on Facebook where I look younger than I am now. But it's appreciating that, you know, time has passed.
And, yeah.
And whether, you know, whether it's ever possible to, I guess, stop time with a photograph.
Hmm.
You're talking about a sense of nostalgia as well.
Yeah,
it's nostalgia. It's the longing for something that is gone.
It's gone.
Yeah. And also these great images of the past, the Cartier-Bressons and the like. When I look at those pictures, I must say the one thing that I think of every single time I see that is all the people in this picture are now dead.
Wow, you morbid person.
Yeah, yeah. It does. I mean, I love the great photography of the photographers of Magnum. And by the way, in a previous incarnation, Bernice Chorley was very much a photographer as well.
Yes.
Well, you should see pictures of Cam on Facebook when he was in his 20s.
I did show you one, didn't I?
I did, with his cafe and his, like, you know, frosted tips on his bouffant hair.
I looked pretty good, didn't I? Oh,
you looked a bit like a girl, but there wasn't
but that was the time.
To it.
That was the age. Oh, you're speaking
Steve of... Steve Strange was your hero, wasn't he?
Briefly. No, David Bowie, though. I'd say, if you want to create a timeless image, just have David Bowie in it. And... You're done, really. Okay, well, Azura, I hope you succeed in creating that image for yourself one day.
I'll send it to you. yeah. in an envelope.
All right, and then and we will judge it.
Okay.
All right. And but now we move on to the final part of A Bit of Culture, recommendations, where we recommend something that we think might be of interest. And I'm going to go first. So we were talking about motherhood stroke parenthood, and so therefore I wanted to choose a movie which I think is the best evocation of parenthood that I've seen for quite some time. It's actually a few years back, but it's the I think it's the last truly funny film I watched, and that is We're the Millers, with Jason Sudeikis and Jennifer Aniston, about a fake family that's just suddenly put together for reasons of crime making, and they're on the run against the forces of evil. It's hilariously funny.
Actually, that's a very funny film. Yes,
it's a very funny film, and I think, because they're a fake family, and these are people who are thrown into parenthood, who've never been parents, and then sort of like working out what being a parent is and being what a child is, being a son or a daughter, and I think it's a really good, interesting discussion.
Were you mirroring that sense if you were thrown in that situation?
Could you do it if you were thrown into a situation like that? I mean, could you do it?
If I was suddenly having to parent.
Yes,
but
yes.
Only if they were grown up enough.
Only. You can't.
No, you wouldn't change your diaper, put it that way.
Conditional. No. There is no such thing as conditions.
I'm putting down conditions. And once they're past the boring stage and they actually have minds of their own and they have, like, they can say things like, you know, David Bowie's cool, as opposed to why is the sky blue?
Or talk back at you.
Yeah, cool. I can take that.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, shut up.
I need my space.
Yeah, shut
Go
up.
Go away.
Yeah, listen to me. That kind of, I can say things like that. Listen to me. I'm your father.
Okay.
You just want to lord it over someone. That's what you want to do.
That's what Bernice was asking me. Anyway, so We're the Millers. It's a really funny film, and I want to go and watch it again, actually.
Okay.
So, Bernice, what's your recommendation?
Yes, well, I just recently watched this very beautiful film by Tom Ford, the fashion designer, called Nocturnal Animals, with Amy Adams, Jake Gyllenhaal. It's so stylish. This man, I tell you, he's brilliant. You know, everybody looks so impeccably coiffed. It's beautifully shot. They're wearing beautiful clothes. But it's such a tight psychological thriller. It's based on a novel written by an American writer called Austin Wright, called Tony and Susan. And it's sort of a film within a film. You've got a story within a story. Aaron Taylor-Johnson, who's married to Sam Taylor Wood.
Beautiful boy.
Won a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actor. It's wonderful, wonderful film.
This is his, like, second film?
It's his second film. Yeah. What was the name of the first one again?
He was in a Marvel.
Tom Ford.
Tom Ford, yes. The first one was A Single Man.
Yes.
And Colin Firth.
And Colin Firth never looked so good.
Right?
I think, you know, with Tom Ford's movies, you literally step into his world.
Yes.
And what he wants the rest of the world to look like. I mean, like, he's an aesthetist, isn't he? And I think it's a visual treat, at the very least, I imagine, Bernice.
Yeah.
Oh, you haven't seen it as well?
I have not seen
it. Oh, it's absolutely
I am a mother
beautiful.
Of two very
and
young children.
You have a fashionista like you,
yes,
course.
You have to watch it. I mean, it'll seriously want you and go and get a manicure immediately.
After this week, I can.
Wow.
Right?
It sounds just like We're the Millers. It's the same kind of thing, I think. You know. Anyway, so that's Tom Ford's...
But go and get a kid. Oh, yeah. My goodness.
Tom Ford's new movie, which is called...
Nocturnal Animals.
Right, Tom Ford, check it out, especially if you like fashion.
But also, it's a good film. It's a really
like
it won the Grand Jury Prize at Venice last
year.
You two
are so easy to rile up.
Oh
so, and finally, Azura.
Another movie recommendation. Because, of course, there's been so much hype around La La Land and how it's a musical and how it's done well despite being a musical, which is, you know, seen to be an outdated genre. One of my favorites. In terms of musicals, I was raised on a diet of Julie Andrews, by the way. You know, she was a patron saint in my household in one way or another. Funny Face, songs by Gershwin. You've got Esther. You've got Audrey Hepburn. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's loosely based on Richard Avedon himself. You know, you've got a character called Dick Avery, played by Fred Astaire. And basically, he is the main photographer for what's, you know, closely veiled Harper's Bazaar. And, and he creates some stunning shots. There's some stunning moments in the movie. And it's just a movie that's full of charm. And I think, you know, in a very charmless world that we currently live in, you know, charmless leaders, charmless people, I think we all need a little bit of charm in our lives. And I think watching Funny Face will definitely bring
Funny
some
Face,
of that.
Am I mixing that with another? I thought Audrey Hepburn.
It's Audrey Hepburn.
It's Audrey Hepburn, yes.
Oh, you said Julie Andrews, though.
No, I said Julie Andrews was a patron saint in my household.
So what was the connection?
She was inferring to musicals.
Sound of Music.
Oh, right, so just a musical thing.
Yeah.
All right, okay.
Right
yeah.
Have you watched it before?
A long time ago.
Yes, long. That's almost like a timeless type of film.
Very stylish.
It is.
Very stylish.
Very stylish.
I mean, she's very stylish.
It's a very thin plot. Improbable in many ways. But, you know, there's so many nice little vignettes of her dancing in bars in Paris and her doing a photo shoot, you know, outdoors in Paris during springtime. It's a bit of an ugly duckling movie as well, because she starts off being this bookish little girl who works in a bookshop, mm-hmm. and she becomes this glamorous model. Mm. So there's that whole Cinderella element as well. If only Fred Astaire was better looking. I've never been a fan of
No, I love Fred Astaire. I am a big fan of Fred Astaire.
Really?
I think he's fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't beat him on his feet, but, you know, he has a face that a mother would love.
Yeah, but so much...
only a mother would
so
love.
So much charm and...
Yes,
exactly. It was a different time altogether, 1957.
Okay, funny face. I wish I'd check it out again, actually. Yeah. Okay, so that's three pretty different movies there.
Yep.
All three movies as recommendations. And so now only remains me to thank Azura Rahman. Thank you so much.
I'm kind of feeling the feels now, is how they say it today.
Feeling the
young
feels.
People say it today,
yeah. Okay.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being here, and thank you for being part of BFM all these years, and also thank you, Bernice Chorley.
Thank you, always a pleasure being here.
Great to have you. Wish you good luck with that Iceland thing.
Yes.
Yeah, it wouldn't be amazing if it actually happened. And also,
I can do a podcast from there.
Hey,
if it happens, oh my goodness!
Hey, listener out there, with all that writing residency stuff, she can do a podcast. And if you'd like to get in touch with us to give Bernice her residency, please do so on our Facebook page. And if you do, it'll be the first thing that anyone's ever written on that page. But please like us, because it just gives us a nice, warm,
makes
glowing
us
feeling.
Feel happy.
It does. And don't you want that? Sadly, we probably won't have Azura again. Maybe we'll. Maybe she comes over again. And but please join us next week for another exciting episode of A Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during red, white, and blue savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.